KRFP is supported by
Tie-Dye Everything, specializing in locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located behind Mikey's at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. You can also find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com. KRFP is also supported by
Ponderosa Rentals, providing quality home rentals since 2006, including 3 and 4 bedroom apartments and houses. For more information, you can reach Isaac at 208-882-6442 or ponderosarentals at hotmail.com.
KRFP, Moscow.
And you are listening to KRFP Moscow. Nice to be with you here on a holiday Wednesday. Happy 4th of July to everyone. And thank you so much for listening to your community radio station, 92.5 FM on your dial, www.krfp.org on your web browser. Let's take a look at the weather report here. Tonight, clear with low around 45. Wind out of the northeast between 3 and 5. Tomorrow, which is Thursday, sunny with a high near 79. Winds out of the northwest between 5 and 8. Thursday night, mostly clear with low around 48. Winds out of the northwest between 5 and 7. Friday, Sunday, sunny with a high near 86. Winds will be light. Friday night, mostly clear with low around 53. Winds out of the northwest around 6. Saturday, sunny with a high near 91. Saturday night, mostly clear with low around 56. Wow. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 95. Sunday night, mostly clear with low around 59. And Monday, even though we're certainly in no rush to get there, sunny with a high near 96. Now that is really, do I have the right city plugged in here? I sure enough do. This is the weather report from Moscow. And well, I guess July is coming in like a lion. Even though I think it's March, it goes out like in like a lamb, out like a lion, something like that. Well, I was just commenting to someone the other day how seasonably cool and even a little wet it's been. Certainly the month of June, I loved it. Wow. But all that seems to be changing as we have a warmer, actually a hot, high-pressure, drier, high-pressure system moving into the Palouse. And so a great, great weekend to get out of town. Me and my girlfriend were out biking around the Palouse today, and then we went over to Pullman for a little bit and through downtown Moscow for a little bit. And the one thing that they have in common is it's a ghost town. Everyone's out of town, and I think everyone's getting out on the rivers. And that's a great thing. It's certainly a good time of the year to be doing that. And so would like to welcome you to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. I want to remind everyone that the views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KRFP Moscow or any other organization, but are rather personal views being expressed. And I'm going to be with you until the 5 o'clock hour here. And so speaking of rivers and people getting out, now I was talking to someone, and I think I was talking to Ashley, and saying, you know, well, what was it like, you know, where you grew up? She grew up in Ohio. Where, what was 4th of July like when you grew up? And, you know, and I'm born and raised in New Jersey, just out of New York City. And so all these little cultures, you know, little cultural enclaves that we have that make up America, you know, everyone has different traditions. And for me, it was really parades, barbecues, and baseball. I guess those are some of the first couple things that pop into my mind growing up as a kid. It seemed like I was always playing baseball on 4th of July. And then, you know, and then as I got older, maybe going down to the beach and seeing fireworks on the boardwalk. You know, people drinking too much and having a good time, and people playing music and a lot of parades back east, and certainly Ashley kind of expressed that a little bit to me. She said a lot of people go down to Cincinnati. And so, you know, certainly certain cities or larger cultural places, you know, larger populations will have, you know, some of the larger cities might have some things to do, pull people in, particularly if you have a river going through your city like Cincinnati. But no such dice here on the Palouse. Pretty quiet. I'm guessing, I know places like Lewiston and Grangeville and Possibly Kamei. I don't know about Kamei or Kuski, places out in Clearwater country. It's a big draw for them. They have rodeos, and Lewiston Clarkson's a big draw. And certainly a lot of people out boating today, and hopefully I'm sure that a lot of people are rafting, maybe out on the Locksaw River today, or out on the Selway River, or out on the North Fork of the Clearwater River, or maybe up on the St. Joe, or down on the main salmon. The lower salmon, I'm sure, has a lot of boats. And I was commenting also to Ashley. She's been really wanting to get out swimming. And it's been a little cool. And it's swimming season's right around the season here. It's a short swimming season out in Clearwater country, depending on how the summer is. But it's been pretty cool and wet. And I don't know. We're going to try and get out maybe up into the out into Clearwater country this weekend. Maybe head out to the Fish and Hungry Creek roadless area. And so nonetheless, we'll kind of share a few things with you. The Great Old Broads for Wilderness are coming out of Durango, Colorado. They're co-sponsoring an event, or I should say, Friends of the Clearwater is piggybacking a 4-day event up at Wilderness Gateway here in about a month. We'll talk about that today. Talk about some options, some places that you might want to go to this weekend if you're looking for plans, looking to get out of town, head up the Clearwater River. Going to give you a couple recommendations. And then I'd also figure we'd talk about the bulk of the program, talking about an article that I have in my hands here called The Last of the Herd, Idaho's Fight Over Endangered Caribou, Property Rights and the Role of the Federal Government. And so I figure I've been wanting to read that article for a while, and that's pretty neat. There are some theories that woodland caribou were native to wild Clearwater country, and that this was maybe as far south as they had come. So nonetheless, we'll get into that a little bit. And once again, you're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. I'm going to be with you here until 5 o'clock. I want to thank you, everyone, for taking time out of their 4th of July day to turn on your community radio station. And why don't we play a little music here? And then when we get back, we'll talk about this 4-day wildland event going on in early August up at the Wilderness Gateway Campground, and how you can register for the event and why you might want to come, and give you all the good details. So thanks so much for listening. This is the Wild Clearwater Country Show, KRFP, Moscow.
My bills are all due and the babies need shoes, but I'm busted. Cotton is down to a quarter a pound and I'm busted. I got a cow that went dry and a hen that won't lay. A big stack of bills that get bigger each day. The county will haul my belongings away. I'm busted. I went to my brother to ask for a loan. I was busted. I hate to beg like a dog for a bone, but I'm busted. My brother said there ain't a thing I can do. My wife and my kids are all down with the flu. And I was just thinking of calling on you. I'm busted. Lord, I'm no thief, but a man can go wrong when he's busted. The food that we canned last summer is gone and I'm busted. Fields are all bare and the cotton won't grow. Me and my family gotta pack up and go. Where I'll make a living, the Lord only knows, but I'm busted.
All right. It doesn't get much more apple pie than that. A little Johnny Cash. Welcome back to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. Nice to be with you here on Wednesday. It's just an odd day to have the holiday. Certainly no one will complain, but you know, do you take Monday, Tuesday off? Do you take Thursday, Friday off? Do you take none of the above off and just take today off? And so that's certainly what I'm planning on doing, even though I might go out and paddle tomorrow with Friends of the Clearwater member, Rob Briggs, out in Pullman. Rob, if you're listening right now, looking forward to, I think we're heading out on the Lower Snake tomorrow. So while it's not Clearwater country, it's certainly part of the Columbia Basin. And so nonetheless, good times, thank you for joining us. Great old Broads for Wilderness. Let's see here. Enough is enough. Thus far and no farther. Think of your children. Of their children, of the hawks, the buzzards, the lizards, the bear. Save a little room and time for the free play of the human spirit and the wild play of the animal kingdom. That's a quote from Edward Abbey on the back of a Great Old Broads for Wilderness brochure, which I have for me here today. Great Old Broads for Wilderness, their headquarters, national office, is out of Durango, Colorado. You can check them out at www.greatoldbroads.org. And let's see what else we got here. It's time to Mother Nature. Great Old Broads for Wilderness is a national grassroots nonprofit organization created in 1989 to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Wilderness Act. It says here the group uses the voices and activism of elders to protect and preserve wilderness and wildlands. Today, there are Broads of all ages and both genders in every state working to protect America's last wild places. Wilderness advocacy. The Great Old Broads are dedicated to the preservation and protection of America's roadless public lands. Broads testify at hearings on land use policy, write letters to the media and legislatures, and participate in protests and rallies. The group wages campaigns to defend the nation's wilderness and lend support to other like-minded organizations. The group educates themselves about wilderness issues so that they can educate the public and policymakers. And the group certainly has fun while they're at it. And so this is a really logical fit for the Great Old Broads for Wilderness to be coming up to North Central Idaho and joining with the Friends of the Clearwater, our local public lands advocacy group that watchdogs the 4 million plus acres of roadless, or rather public lands, I wish roadless, public lands up in the Clearwater Basin. About a million of those 4 million acres, or about a quarter, this is roughly, is roadless. And so Friends of the Clearwater is teaming up with the Great Old Broads for Wilderness at August 2nd to August 6th at the Wilderness Gateway Campground, which is off Highway 12. And this four-day wildland extravaganza is centered around educating and raising awareness and advocating for the designation or permanent protection of the Wheatus Creek Roadless Area on the Clearwater National Forest at roughly 250,000 acres. Many people consider the Wheatus Creek to be the heart of wild Clearwater country, and they just don't make low elevation river bottom valleys much anymore, particularly in a roadless condition, particularly in conditions that serve as critical habitat for elk and for other ungulates and predators, and also the fishery, a very healthy fishery outside of Dwarshak Dam, blocking, pretty much wiping out the Steelhead Run. Still a lot of important habitat for native species like bull trout and West Slope cutthroat trout. And so Wheatus Creek, this four-day extravaganza is centered around Wheatus Creek. And so this is August 2nd to August 6th at the Wilderness Gateway Campground. And if you know your wild Clearwater country geography, you'll realize that the Wilderness Gateway Campground isn't exactly next to Wheatus Creek. It's not exactly on the doorstep of it. But that's because there's going to be a lot more going on. Let's see here. Thursday night, I believe the Great Old Broads have about 30 to 35 women, some of their members, coming as far away as places as North Carolina or New Mexico. Certainly, there's a number of people coming from Idaho, from Boise, and from the Palouse, and from the Clearwater Valley. There'll probably be some people coming over from Montana, but then people will be flying in from places like Arizona or Colorado or North Carolina. And everyone is going to arrive Thursday, August 2nd at the Wilderness Gateway Campground. And we are very fortunate to be having Lynn Lahey of Fighting Goliath, who also is a longtime interpreter and Lewis and Clark historian. Lynn Lahey is going to be providing everyone, welcoming everyone with a campfire talk that Thursday night. And then Friday morning, we're all going to wake up. The Great Old Broads for Wilderness and Friends of the Clearwater have hired an outfitter out of Orofino to cook all the meals for everyone over the four-day weekend. And certainly that comes with a small price tag, but breakfasts and dinners will be provided by our outfitter in Orofino, who will remain nameless for now, but she's a very good cook. She's got a long background of cooking for large groups. So wake up Friday morning with a nice breakfast, and then we're probably going to head down to the Lockshaw Research Natural Area and discover some of the really neat hiking trails, such as up Apgar Creek or Dead Man Creek, and explore some of the coastal disjunct, which is one of the really unique properties of Clearwater Country. Basically, it has everything to do with the wet and moist climate, and the amount of precipitation, and the type of plants, native plants such as Pacific dogwood. I believe Pacific dogwood and a few other species that kind of represent some of that coastal disjunct. You can't find them anywhere in the United States other than west of the Cascades. But they have found a kind of a little native pocket over the years, and that's due to different geological factors and climactic conditions. There's about 1,100 acre research natural area. It's called the Lockshaw RNA, and so there's going to be a biologist or a botanist hopefully with us that day, and we'll spend the day hiking through the research natural area, and then Friday night we'll all go back to the campground and Friends of the Clearwater, and possibly with the help of some other conservation organizations like Alliance for the Wild Rockies and Friends of the Wild Swan. They're all going to come down, and we're going to give a big evening presentation on the Northern Rockies bioregion and the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act and the Wild Clearwater Country and all of the why numerous scientific studies have come out and said that it doesn't get any wilder from a sense of acreage, habitat, solitude. It doesn't get any wilder in the lower 48 than really in the Clearwater Country, in the Clearwater Basin. And we'll talk about why we need to have a bioregional vision and why we need to bring landscape level protections, not piecemeal collaborative protections to the Clearwater Basin, not political solutions, but instead we need true visionary ecological protections, such as wilderness designation or national monuments or even a national park. There's a number of different ways that we can protect Clearwater Country and its vast roadless areas and wild and scenic rivers. And so that will be the base of the presentation Friday night. And then Saturday morning, we're going to wake up at Wilderness Gateway again. And I believe we're going to have a member of, let's see here, I believe Lynn Lahey is going to come back in and give another slight talk over breakfast Saturday morning and prepare us for a long hike up along the Lolo Motorway, along some ancient Lewis and Clark and Nez Perce trails. And the second half of Saturday will also be spent hiking out into the Wheatus Creek roadless area off of what they call 12 Mile Saddle, which is on the Lolo Motorway. and we'll take a hike along Windy Saddle and take in just some spectacular views of the North Fork Clearwater. And so Saturday is going to be an epic day of hiking, both along ancient Lewis and Clark and Nez Perce Trail, as well as hiking and learning about why Wheatus Creek needs to be fully protected and not piecemealed or chopped up by what we fear is what the Clearwater Basin Collaborative is leaning towards. And so that'll be, hopefully we'll have great weather. And then we'll come back Saturday night, and we're going to have a big dinner, and then we'll possibly have some live music. There's also a possibility that the Idaho Conservation League will be giving a presentation Saturday night. I think that still needs to be confirmed. And it's like I said, but hopefully we'll have some live music also Saturday night. And wake up Sunday morning and a member of the Nez Perce tribe, of the Nimiipuu, working with James Holt right now, who's a friend of mine and a Nez Perce. And we're trying to bring in either himself or one of his colleagues or friends to give a really neat interpretive program Sunday morning about the Nimiipuu and the Nez Perce and how the Clearwater country has always been theirs and always will be theirs, and what this place means to them, and some of the neat conservation measures that they take, whether it's trying to bring full biological recovery to the Northern Rockies gray wolf, or why we need to decommission the dams on the lower Snake River, why we need to restore wild salmon and steelhead runs, and a bunch of neat things like that. So that'll be Sunday morning, and then Sunday after breakfast, I think we might go hike up into the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness. Maybe go hike up to a place like Old Man Point, or we might go hot springing up at the Jerry Johnson Campground. And then Sunday night, bring it all back home one last night at the Wilderness Gateway Campground and have a big happy hour and more live music. And then Monday, August 6th, the Great Old Broads will all pack their stuff up and go home. And at the end of the day, we're looking at 4 days of camping and swimming and hiking and listening to interpretive programs about wild Clearwater country and why it's such a special place. And it should be a really, really good time. I want you to check out the Great Old Broads for Wilderness at www.greatoldbroads.org, or you can check out Friends of the Clearwater at www.friendsoftheclearwater.org. Certainly the local Palouse Band of the Great Old the Palouse Broad Band of the Great Old Broads for Wilderness has been working very hard on this 4-day wildland extravaganza, and it's going to be a really good time. There is a cost if you are camping with the group at Wilderness Gateway Campground, depending on how many nights you're going to stay. The group has 5 campsites reserved. And then if you're going to be eating with the group, then you can also, then there's also a charge affiliated with eating. You don't have to register for all 4 days to be a part of the event. If you want to go to the Wheatus Wilderness Broadwalk, you can simply show up for a day. You can show up for an afternoon. You can camp for a night. You can have dinner with the group, catch an interpretive program, then camp on your own. There's all sorts of options and flexibility, but this is going to be really looking forward to it. It's literally a month from today. We will be at the Wilderness Gateway Campground, advocating, learning, playing, and advocating for stronger protections for some of our favorite roadless areas of the North Fork Clearwater, places like Fish and Hungry Creek, Kelly Creek, Mallard Larkins, Wheatus Creek, the upper North Fork of the Clearwater, Pot Mountain, a vast million acres of roadless country, just incredibly unique. You can't find that type of landscape level, big wild country anymore in the lower 48 unless it's already a national park or unless it's already a designated wilderness like the Bob Marshall. So, I'll read what Ed Abbey said again. Enough is enough. Thus far, no farther. Think of your children, of their children, of the hawks, buzzards, lizards, and bears. Save a little room and time for the free play of the human spirit and the wild play of the animal kingdom. So, on that note, Let's play a little bit more Johnny Cash here, and when we get back, we'll jump into this article, The Last of the Herd, Idaho's Fight Over Endangered Caribou, Property Rights, and the Role of the Federal Government. This is KRFP, Moscow.
Come all you rounders if you want to hear the story about a brave engineer. Casey Jones was the roller's name. On a 6'8 wheeler, boys, he rode to fame. Caller called Casey about a 4:30. He kissed his wife at the station door. He climbed in the cabin with his orders in his hand. Said, this is the trip to the promised land. Casey Jones climbed in a cabin. Casey Jones, orders in his hand. Casey Jones leaning out the window, taking a trip to the promised land. Through South Memphis, yards on a fly, rain been a-falling and the water was high. Everybody knew by the engine's moan that the man at the throttle was Casey Jones. Well, Jones said, fireman, don't you fret. Sam Webb said, I ain't a-giving up yet. 8 hours late with the southbound mail. Be on time or we're leaving the rails. Casey Jones climbed in a cabin. Casey Jones, orders in his hand. Casey Jones leaning out the window, taking a trip to the promised land. Dead on the rail was a passenger train. Blood was a-boiling in Casey's brain. Casey said, hey, look out ahead, Sam, jump, off the ball. He did. Well, a hand on a whistle and a hand on a brake. North Mississippi was wide awake. I see railroad officials said, he's a good engineer to be a laying dead. Casey Jones climbed in the cabin. Casey Jones, orders in his hand. Casey Jones leaning out the window, taking a trip to the promised land. Headaches and heartaches and all kind of pain are all a part of a railroad train. Sweat and toil, the good and the grand, are part of the life of a railroad man. Casey Jones climbed in the cabin. Casey Jones, orders in his hand. Casey Jones leaning out the window, taking a trip to the promised land.
Pullman Transit will run special buses before and after the annual fireworks display at Sunnyside Park. The fireworks display is being put on by the Pullman Chamber of Commerce. The vacation E route, C route, and H route will operate between 4:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. and will start up again after the fireworks show around 10:30 p.m. Park and ride lots are located at the Pullman Aquatic Center, Dismore's Living Faith Fellowship, Higginson's, Wheatland Mall, Walmart, and Safeway. The fireworks will be preceded with entertainment at Sunnyside Park with music from the community band of the Palouse, Dan Marr, and the Fabulous Kingpins beginning at 5:30 p.m.
That's right. Good place to be tonight. Sunnyside Park in Pullman. Was over there for about an hour and a half, lounging on that very large lawn, park, if you will. And as everyone was gearing up for a night full of fireworks and live music, and certainly a good place to be. Town overall is mostly quiet, at least here in Moscow, but I think a lot of people do head over to Pullman if you're in the area for that fireworks and 4th of July celebration. So check it out if you want to. Good to be with you here on the Wild Clearwater Country Show, taking you up till 5 o'clock. And now I wanted to read a story here that appeared in the newspaper not too long ago, Locking Antlers. while a small herd of woodland caribou is driving North Idaho crazy. Now, that's an anthropocentric beginning to the story, but we'll give it a shot. Stag Leap Provincial Park along Canadian Highway 3 feels less like a park than some long-abandoned outpost. Other than a pull-off for cars and a pair of forlorn outhouses, the only features of the park's entrance are a trailhead and a warning sign. The sign asks if we know how to avoid avalanches, and if not, can we rescue ourselves from them? We don't and we can't, but we're not turning back. It's taken a 155-mile drive and a pop quiz by the Canadian Border Patrol to get here. Once in British Columbia, we drive up to the Kootenay Pass, which reaches an elevation of over 5,800 feet. As my ears pop from the elevation, the car passes bighorn sheep grazing and deer bounding up the mountainside. At the park, we strap on snowshoes. My traveling companion and I are first-timers and follow the trail south of the highway. We're just 5 miles from where Washington, Idaho, and British Columbia meet. Snow surrounds us, tightly packed beneath our feet, with large, fluffy flakes falling from the sky. As we advance along the trail, the occasional rumbling of vehicles falls away. There's only silence. We hear no birds, no animals, just the sound of my wheezing lungs as we lope into subalpine forest. We're searching for any sign of the elusive woodland caribou. Only an estimated 1,850 woodland caribou remain in the entire world, just slightly more than the number of endangered pandas. Most of these reside further north in the Canadian Rockies, but a small subset, the southern Selkirk's herd, dwells in this border country. While estimates vary, the herd is thought to number around 40. Few people are familiar with the caribou. Fewer still have seen one. But this creature has sparked lawsuits and court-ordered land closures. Now, a controversial federal plan to help save the species is provoking fears of economic decline, cries of social engineering, and efforts to remove it from the endangered species list. At the center of the debate is math. How do you calculate the value of an entire species? For an animal so difficult to see, the mark of the woodland caribou is everywhere. The Cabela's in Post Falls boasts a mounted head near its taxidermy museum. The word caribou is found all over local maps, creeks in Bonner and Kootenay counties, a road in Bonner's Ferry, a county in southeastern Idaho. At the Village Kitchen Restaurant in Priest River, you'll find a t-shirt displayed that touts a recipe for a woodland caribou stew. It calls for one caribou, 40 pounds of Idaho potatoes, a giant cooking pot, and 50 gallons of water. Woodland caribou of one of seven caribou subspecies, two of which are already extinct. They're cousins to the more common barren ground caribou found in Alaska and Canada, as well as in Scandinavia, where they're known as reindeer. The woodland subspecies has antlers that grow to about 40 inches wide, slightly smaller than their cousins, but thicker in the middle and not as robust at the tip. Their hooves are concave and rounded to navigate the deep patches of snow they find in the mountains. But while the barren ground variety remains common, the woodland caribou has been on the decline for over a century. They once ranged from Maine to Michigan and Minnesota. In the northwest, they roam south of Coeur d'Alene and into the Bitterroot Mountains of central Idaho, a.k.a. there has been theories that woodland caribou were native to the Clearwater Mountains and to the wild Clearwater country. The article now continues, they were found as far east as Kalispell, Montana, and west into northeastern Washington. But over the decades, wildfires and human settlement, hunting, logging, and development have ravaged caribou and their habitat. By 1908, the animals were gone from New England. By World War II, they were vanished from the Great Lakes region. In the 1950s, there were an estimated 100 caribou in the Selkirk herd roaming across the inland northwest, according to federal reports. By 1983, when the federal government listed them under the Endangered Species Act, there were only about 30 animals left. As part of the listing, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was supposed to designate an area of land considered necessary for the animal to survive. 5. In the case of the woodland caribou, this means subalpine forests containing their food, a lichen known as old man's beard, that hangs from tree branches and takes decades to grow. But the critical habitat was never established, so the Spokane-based Lands Council sued the Federal Wildlife Service to designate a habitat for the caribou. In 2009, a federal court ruled in favor of the Lands Council, spawning a proposal released in November of 2011 that would create a swath of critical habitat embracing 375,000 acres, or about 650 square miles in North Idaho and northeastern Washington. Of this, only about 15,000 acres are private property, according to Byron Holt, a supervisory fish and wildlife biologist with the Wildlife Service. State and government manage the rest. The designation would force landowners and other groups to apply for federal permits when making changes to land under the proposal. Such changes include logging, building a new road, filling in wetlands, and obtaining snowmobile trail grooming permits. For Mike Peterson, executive director of the Lands Council, creating the critical habitat means the country takes the Endangered Species Act and our appreciation for diverse animals seriously. We've come together as a nation and passed those laws that say we want to have those species recovered. They're one of our most endangered species. At what point do we give up on something? He continues. I think everybody would be very sad if the bald eagle disappeared. But caribou. Priest Lake, Idaho, meanders for a crooked 19 miles along the western flank of the Selkirk Mountains. Dense forests ring the lake and provide a home for deer, black bears, moose, and bald eagles. Vacationers in the summer come for the camping and boating. In the winter, sled dog teams and snowmobiles avail themselves of the open spaces. When caribou crosses the lips of Priest Lake residents, it sounds like they're uttering an ancient curse, however. The caribou in that area has been kind of like a black cow, says regional economist Dan Green. That animosity goes back to a pair of land closures, one in 1994 and another in 2007, to protect caribou habitat. The latter restricted snowmobile use on about 230,000 acres in the area, much of the same land being looked at in the new proposal. Green, who is conducting a financial impact study that's being underwritten by the Idaho Snowmobile Association, says the earlier closures hurt Priest Lake's recreation sector, the area's dominant industry since forest and timber jobs left. He notes that area resorts have lost between 30 and 70% of their winter business since the 2007 closure. Green admits that the Great Recession, which officially began in December of 2007, contributed to some of the decline. But he points out that snowmobile enthusiasts tend to fall into higher income brackets and are more insulated from economic shocks. They don't have about $50,000 to $100,000 invested in their pickup, their trailer. Oh, he says they have about $50,000 to $100,000 invested in their pickup, their trailer, and their machines. A snowmobile sells for between $7,000 and $12,000. Built for the trail, the machines go as fast as 80 miles an hour. But it's not the rush of the speed that draws Ed Porter to the snowmobile, it's the scenery. It's incredible. It's like being out there in a Clydesdale commercial or a Christmas card. It's just beautiful, pristine white. In 2006, Porter bought Priest Lake Power Sports, a cramped sales and maintenance shop on Highway 57 just south of Nordman on the west side of the lake. 90% of the wintertime business is based on snowmobiles. He rents them, sells them, fixes them. 6 years ago, he had 30 snowmobiles that he rented. They were all out almost every weekend. Now I have 5 snowmobiles, and they're not rentals to speak of. Porter says that even though a judge later reopened some of the trails that were shut down in 07, the initial closure and the subsequent media coverage ended Priest Lake's run as a winter destination. Snowmobile registrations, in fact, decreased in each of 6 Idaho snowmobile regions between 07 and 2011, according to Idaho Parks and Recreation. But the northern region, Bonner, Boundary, Benoit, Kootenai, and Shoshone counties, saw the second highest drop over that time. Snowmobile tags there dropped by about 28%. Only the cluster of counties directly south saw a higher decline with a 35% drop. But can you really blame it on caribou? Asked Tim Laser, a wildlife biologist with the Selkirk Conservation Alliance. I would probably blame it more on the economy. Before his time at the Alliance, Layer spent 20 years tracking woodland caribou with the U.S. Forest Service. Flying in a Cessna 182 in January, Laser spotted four caribou about 6 miles south of the international border. He also reports seeing snowmobile tracks in the closed areas. It's because of this that Laser is less concerned that caribou protection is chasing off snowmobilers than that snowmobilers are chasing off caribou. Snowmobiles generate 100 decibels of sound, according to the National Institutes of Health, just a notch below chainsaws and rock concerts. Heavy city traffic registers as 85. Lawnmowers rank at 90. To avoid gradual hearing loss at 100 decibels, the National Institutes of Health recommends no more than 15 minutes of exposure to continuous noise like snowmobiles. There's been study after study that caribou will move out of an area due to motorized activity, says Peterson of the Lands Council. He points to an 01 report conducted in Canada on the interaction between snowmobiles and caribou. While the report doesn't make a conclusion, it notes that caribou have been known to leave places they once occupied when snowmobiling increases. Laser and Peterson say that racket is scaring the caribou out of their historical habitat, potentially bringing the herd closer to extinction. A March public meeting between Bonner County Commissioners and the Wildlife Service underscored just how wide the chasm is between the feds and the locals. At the meeting, Holt, 50, sits in a conference room at the inn at Priest Lake. He speaks like a good-natured and wonkish scientist, probably because he is. He dives into the debates with salvos of science, with words like augmentation and ungulates. Across from him are two Bonner County commissioners and a county attorney, along with a small army of volunteer researchers. An audience of about 40, most of them against the proposal, watches the two sides engage in verbal wrangling. If Holt has an alter ego twin, it's Mike Nielsen. The county commissioner adamantly disputes the idea that the plan is necessary for protecting caribou. He unleashes a bevy of arguments against the Wildlife Services and the plan, that the feds didn't talk with the county before releasing the plan, that predators are killing the caribou, and that government land closures are killing businesses and punishing snowmobile riders. People are very upset and it's impacting businesses, Nielsen says. This is social engineering. Nielsen argues that there's no evidence of snowmobiles killing caribou, and they can't drive away the animals, he says, because no caribou were found as south as Priest Lake. Moreover, Nielsen argues that the proposal doesn't include a predator management plan. That, he says, is the biggest threat facing the caribou. Holt, the biologist, agrees that predators are a problem. Development and logging in North Idaho have opened up the old-growth forests, drawing in deer. Mountain lions come for the deer and then find the caribou. Nielsen argues that wolves reintroduced into Yellowstone National Park have migrated up to the Selkirks. But he and Holt disagree on whether they're snapping up caribou. To what degree wolves will prey on caribou here, we don't know, Holt says. Dale Goble, a law professor at the University of Idaho, agrees with the concept of the proposal. A critical habitat designation won't impact landowners, he says. The plan mostly outlines a coordination process for the myriad layers of government that have a stake in the land. You can use your property. They're not attempting to restrict what people do on their own land. Given the Selkirk's herd's low numbers, Goble says a critical habitat proposal could help an animal so close to extinction. Their population appears to be so low that killing one or two might jeopardize the species. Before it makes a decision on the critical habitat designation, the Wildlife Services has two more public hearings. This was back in April 28th and June 16th. A final decision should be made on the habitat designation by the end of the year, according to Holt. A quick look at Commissioner Nielsen will tell you he is former military and law enforcement. His hair is neatly trimmed, his tie clip is neatly pinned. At his Sandpoint office a few weeks after the March meeting, he sits behind a desk topped with neatly stacked papers. He describes himself as liking caribou. He recalls driving through a stray herd of barren ground caribou when he lived in Alaska. But he doesn't see this plan as necessary for so few animals and such a high cost. Nielsen made a motion earlier in the year, approved by his fellow Bonner County commissioners, to spend up to $10,000 to pay the Pacific Legal Foundation, a California-based nonprofit, in an effort to delist woodland caribou from the Endangered Species Act. If the caribou were to be delisted, the whole conversation is moot. It's no longer an issue. Nielsen says he hopes the feds will reduce the portion of Idaho covered under the new proposal to just the northwest corner of the state, which is where the caribou are consistently seen. If they want to put that into wilderness and call it wilderness, I don't think any of us would object to that. But not 375,000 acres. That's overkill for four animals. The financial concerns go beyond snowmobiling. Logging could decline even further if the proposal passes, according to Idaho Department of Lands, which oversees 65,000 acres covered in the proposal. A letter that the department plans to submit as public comment warns of several consequences, including the loss of 66 jobs, $23 million in lost timber revenue over the next 30 years, reduced public school funding from failing logging revenue, and slower and more expensive forest fire responses due to hampered road maintenance and upgrades. Jason Kirchner, a spokesman for Idaho Panhandle National Forest, says the proposal will affect logging, hiking, watershed projects, firewood collection. Forest management that included logging would likely require the U.S. Forest Service to consult with the U.S. Wildlife for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. In that case, the Forest Service would submit its plan to the Wildlife Agency, which would examine the impact of caribou habitat. While it would not be a binding decision, Kirchner says, it would carry weight. If it's something where they say this is not okay, we're going to listen to that. Kirchner wouldn't comment on the U.S. Forest Service position on the proposal. He says the agency will soon submit its thoughts as part of the public comment. But he does acknowledge that the presence of snowmobilers riding illegally on stretches of closed land, despite Forest Service patrols. We know that it's happening, but the vast majority of the people going up there to snowmobile are staying on the trails. Peterson of the Lands Council disputes the Idaho Department of Lands public comment letter forecasting a host of ill economic effects. Just because it's a critical caribou habitat doesn't mean that you can't log. I don't know what they're basing their number on. We've identified over 300,000 acres that aren't anywhere near the caribou habitat that are suitable for timber production, he adds. Peterson also dismisses complaints that the proposal goes too far. The plan as it is, he says, may not do enough to protect the caribou. They need to talk about what activities should and shouldn't take place within that critical habitat proposal, adding that the plan should consider specifically protecting trees that caribou eat from. Jim Peek, a professor emeritus of wildlife resources at the University of Idaho, is hopeful that the decline of logging over the last generation will set the caribou habitat up for natural resurgence. As cut forests thicken up, deer move out, taking the predators with them. But Jim Peek sees the burden falls on people to make sure the habitat survives. If the habitat's there and we've done our job and the caribou still blink out, I'll feel like we did our best under the circumstances. If they vanish without any help, I think it's very serious. We're just too damn selfish. At Stag Lee Provincial Park, fir trees tower in the sky with old man's beard hanging off stubby branches like Christmas tinsel. One tree is dead and enshrouded with it. The black and light green varieties intermingle, leading the trees a surreal two-tone pattern. We see nothing but snowshoe tracks on the main trail, so we head up a steeper offshoot. The forest closes in on us, and the incline registers in my legs. We're probably above 6,000 feet. We stop at several points to admire the view from our elevation. We look for woodland caribou. We look for hoof prints. We see neither. We keep going. The snowfall has been coming down thick, and we eventually abandon our search and head back to the car. Other than a squirrel dashing near the highway at the outset of our hike, we haven't seen any animals. We buzz back through the Kootenai Pass again, hoping to see caribou on the roadside. But even the bighorn sheep and bounding deer from earlier have disappeared. A caribou crossing sign mocks us. I point my Mercury station wagon back east, and we end up in a Bonner's Ferry bar sitting next to a wiry man named Terry Shervin. Shervin, 64, worked in area schools for over 20 years. In his time off, he'd get out to the wilderness to hunt or fish, or just to get away from people. Never saw a caribou, Shervin says, never did. Heading home, my Mercury glides through the darkness of the caribou ancestral home, bound for Spokane. Only one stop remains. I pull off the highway in Post Falls and find the Cabela's, the big box homage to everything rugged. Doesn't take long to find the massive woodland caribou head mounted on a column. Mouth closed, it stares at us dully, refusing to yield the hideouts of its living brethren, refusing to share any hints about their precarious future. And so again here, the Fish and Wildlife Service's proposed critical habitat encompasses about 375,000 acres in northern Idaho and northeastern Washington. Estimated population of caribou in the southern Selkirk herd is about 46. Now, that was back in 2009. A 2011 survey, hampered by weather conditions and considered incomplete, estimated 36. Now, personally, I've heard that there's even smaller numbers. I think as a society, you know, we have to make a decision. Certainly 30, 40, 50 years ago, the American people in Congress made a decision that we were going to protect species that were on the brink of extinction, whether they're threatened or endangered or just about on the about to wink out. We made a decision that we were going to try and share some of this planet, share some of these wildlands, whether they're, and in this case, most of them are public, with other species. Certainly, as we've increased our knowledge of ecology and ecosystems and conservation biology, the more science that comes out of our laboratories and our field work, the more we realize that we all depend on biodiversity, and whether it's species or whether it's the ecosystems that provide the water and the air that provide us with living. All of these things are linked together. They're all pieces of the pie. And if one species starts winking out, then usually a couple of species go with it because they have some sort of symbiotic relationship of some sorts. And what we see is the more and more species that disappear off the planet, it's like a domino effect. And it doesn't really stop. It just keeps on going. And it always bothers me to see, titles like Idaho's Fight Over Endangered Caribou, Property Rights, and the Role of the Federal Government. I living in Idaho sometimes is like living in Alabama in the 1960s, where no one wants to change. No one wants to recognize the public good and what's in the best interest of not only for the American public, but also for our wildlands and some of our natural heritage. In my opinion, woodland caribou, whether there's four or whether there's 54 up there in northern Idaho, we have already made the decision as a country, as people, that we're going to learn how to live with other wildland species, whether they're in a creek, whether they're in a tree, whether they're in a mountain, whether out on the prairie, and that not only is it morally the right thing to do, not only in many cases is it economically the right thing to do, but ecologically, in terms of our future, it's the right thing to do. So, it should be interesting to see what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does up there. There's a lot of political pressure being applied on them. And what's the bottom line is that there's already been a ruling in which a critical habitat designation recovery plan has to be instituted. And so I don't know how the Fish and Wildlife Services does plan to get around that. Certainly, you see many of these same battles being fought, whether it's bighorn sheep, whether it's salmon and steelhead, whether it's gray wolves, or whether it's the woodland caribou. It seems like in places like Idaho, more than other places around the country, the local politics seem to try and really dominate and steer the discussion away from this country's heritage, away from some of our most important laws, and away for what's good for the general public, and instead focus on county demands and on county desires. And that's not the way it works. So I'm rooting for the Woodland caribou, and should be interesting to see what type of decision the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service makes. Extinction is forever. So once something goes extinct, they're gone. And I don't think we should, be rolling the dice, so to speak, and taking actions that might only facilitate a species disappearing. That's no way to live, and that's no way to evolve as a species, as a country, as a society. So let's play a little bit more Johnny Cash, and then we'll wrap up the Wild Clearwater Country Show. KRFP, Moscow.
This 9-pound hammer is a little too heavy for my size, honey, for my size. I'm going on a mountain, gonna see my baby, and I ain't coming back. Lord, I ain't coming back. Oh, roll on, buddy, don't you roll so slow. How can I go when my wheels won't roll? Roll on, buddy, pull a load of coal. How can I go when my wheels won't roll?
And this is KRFP Moscow. So nice to be with you here on a special 4th of July edition of the Wild Clearwater Country Show. We're getting ready to go here. Wanted to give you the 7-day forecast tonight. Clear with a low around 45. Winds out of the northeast between 3 and 5. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 79. Winds out of the northwest between 5 and 8. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 48. Friday, sunny with a high near 86. Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 53. Saturday, sunny with a high near 91. Saturday night, mostly clear with low around 56. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 95. Sunday night, mostly clear with low around 59. Monday, sunny and hot with a high near 96. Monday night, mostly clear with low around 59. Tuesday, sunny and hot, high near 96. Holy smokes, everyone. Stand by the water cooler. Stay hydrated. Stay on the rivers. Go play in wild Clearwater country. Have a great time. Thank you so much for listening to our program. Have a great weekend. You're listening to KRFP Moscow. Please stand by for Between the Lines.
KRFP thanks its donors and underwriters, including
Mikey's Gyros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine such as gyros, falafel, hummus, tabbouleh, and spanakopita, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
You are listening to KRFP Moscow.
We are now no longer the knights who say Nikits. We are now the knights who say
KRFP Moscow.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present a review of recent Supreme Court rulings with Dr. Steffi Wohlhandler of Physicians for a National Health Program, who considers the court's ruling on President Obama's Affordable Care Act and the way forward for advocates of a single-payer health care system. Mark Maurer, Executive Director of the Sentencing Project, who assesses the Supreme Court decision barring mandatory life sentences without the possibility of parole